Good evening and welcome, my friends. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Well, and glad to have you with us here tonight. As always, Tuesday, June 12, 2007, 11 p.m. here in the Central Time Zone. Got a big show for you tonight. Our good friend Colonel Joe will be joining us in about an hour. Now, if you've never heard Colonel Joe, you're in for a real treat. The guy's cured cancer. Is there really anything else I need to say? Right? I mean, come on. Nobody else can really say that, and I would say nobody else can say that. And he does say it. He says it fearlessly. He expects, demands, and requests that somebody actually take him to court to prove it because he has all the documentation. He has three patents. You know, just the usual stuff. So if you've never heard him before, it's a real privilege to be able to have him on the show with us tonight. And we'll cover some of the basics, how you can cure cancer and a variety of other things using just simply a dietary change. It's very, very easy to do. Okay, and it works on a great many other things as well. So we'll talk about some health stuff tonight with our good friend Colonel Joe. We'll also talk about some news before he joins us, and there's certainly a lot of it out there. You may have seen the clips or heard something about it. Bush in, I think it was Albania, just treated like a rock star. I mean, people are screaming. They just want to touch him. They want to touch his head and shake his head and rub their fingers through his hair, and they want to, you know, hug him and kiss him, and you know, he's like, what's going on? He's used to people trying to, you know, throw stuff at him and cuss at him, and he shows up, and he's treated like a rock star, and he's like, what is this all about? So he goes over, and he greets the crowd, shakes some hands, and then, you know, he realizes, hey, this doesn't happen to me very often at all, and it probably won't happen very often to me in other places, certainly not in my own country, so I'll run back over and get some more love. So he did that. And somebody stole his watch. That's what they say. Tony Snow, of course, you know, he doesn't want anyone to think that anybody can lift a watch off the president. Now, granted, most people, again, even in this country, I don't think Bush would be showing that kind of love. Like I said, he was practically crowd surfing. But, you know, anyway, so somebody may have lifted his watch. You may have seen the clip. It's funny. Now, supposedly, Tony Snow said, oh, no, the president put it back in his pocket. I think that's unlikely. Because you could see it's there, and then it's not. Now, was it stolen? Who knows? I actually checked on eBay to see if it was it was listed there, Bush's stolen watch. It's not. Of course, if you're an Albanian and you happen to steal the president's watch, you probably don't want to advertise that. But then again, you know, not the most criminals are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. But I did check on eBay to see if it was there. It's not. But anyway, it's also possible it just fell off. But I just think it's bizarre. Absolutely bizarre, because Bush, of course, we talked about his response to the sort of military coup of sorts, and we covered all this last night. It's not what you'd suspect to be a military coup, but some semblance of one, perhaps. Excuse me, and Bush's reaction to that whole thing, and that they claim in the story he was feigning that illness at the G8 because he was very upset. Regardless, you don't really see world leaders beloved usually like that, certainly not our leader. Is very, very surreal experience, and everything is surreal these days, it seems. Anyway, so we'll talk about some politics and some other things that I think is very, very important that you understand and that you've heard about. If you have not, you need to. So we'll talk about those things. But first things first, welcome to all of you joining us online at www.republicbroadcasting.org. Great website, lots of fun stuff there, and ways you can help support the network and support the various shows, and certainly allow us to continue doing what we love to do, which is, of course, communicate with you guys. Welcome to all of you listening on AM and FM frequencies around the country, around the world. If we're on shortwave, welcome to you. And be aware of our phone number, my friends, because you're more than welcome to weigh in with your thoughts. 800-313-9443, toll free. And worldwide, 1-800-313-9443. Stay with us. Back in 3 minutes with more Frankly Speaking Radio.
World War III? Rising fuel prices? Financial collapse? Trucker strike? North American Union? Our world has become a very fragile place, and we need to be prudent and plan ahead. Don't wait for an impending crisis to become reality. Then it will be too late. Stoves and More wants to help give you freedom from the systems of the world. If the grid is down and fossil fuels are not available to you, how would you heat your home, cook your food, and heat your water? People, we need to be more independent and able to take care of ourselves in a natural disaster, political crisis, or financial financial crisis. Stoves and More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you the independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. With the right application, you'll be able to use these stoves all year long, not just during the winter months. At Stoves and More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. Stoves and More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at StovesandMoreOnline.com. Food, water, and a wood cook stove are keys to your survival in a crisis. Take action!
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 3 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822. 8822.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Glad you're here, my friends. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio, and I'm your host, Frank Whalen. Welcome to the show. This story is out of Germany, and June 7th, from the Seattle Times. It says, as thousands of protesters clashed with police nearby, President Bush and leaders of the other industrial nations traded markedly opposing views here Wednesday on how to combat global warming. Despite the refusal of the United States, China, and some developing countries to agree for calls for mandatory cuts in greenhouse gas emissions, Bush expressed optimism that the summit of the Group of Eight countries will result in agreement for a common strategy. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, host of the gathering at the Baltic Sea Resort, said she wants action on global warming to be the centerpiece of the meeting. Bush has offered to convene a series of meetings among the world's top 15 greenhouse gas emitting nations with the goal of reaching consensus on non-binding goals for reducing pollution. Very, very interesting to watch that whole thing go down. As you'd expect, with typical gatherings of world leaders, not a whole lot accomplished really at all. And I'm sure you've heard extensive coverage about the G8. Very interesting things going on there. Most notably, the protesting. The police just gave up, in essence. Maybe you heard about that. They had a very, very strict sort of areas where people were allowed to gather and where they were not. Different parameters that they had to meet in order to have protests and different things like that. In each subsequent day that the G8 was going on, the cops just kind of retreated a little bit further because they just were exhausted, and they said that. They said, you know, we just can't do this, not to the level that they want, so we're allowing people to, you know, get a little closer or do whatever it is that they are doing. So very impressive, I think, and highlighting the fact that with a heck of a lot of I guess you could say, dedication, perseverance, you can be heard, which I think is pretty fantastic. Now, again, there was a lot of violence like you'd expect and that sort of thing, and that's unfortunate. But at the same time, it seems to me that everything kind of relatively ended somewhat decently. I'm sure there were incidents and situations of abuse. You probably heard about the Greenpeace guys with their inflatable boats. They just went zooming by, and the cops, of course, were, you know, caught off guard, which is probably doesn't look very good. So they start chasing these guys around in their boats. And, you know, the Greenpeace boats are just kind of doing their little donuts and just trying to get away. They're trying to unfurl a banner or something that says, like, save our planet or whatever. So the cops decide that this has gone on long enough. There can be no more of this because you're making us look foolish. So one of these jacked-up police speedboats just rams into one of these Greenpeace boats, knocks everybody off the boat, probably destroyed the boat. People went flying. There were injuries, things like that. Excessive force, obviously, being used, but you'd expect that sort of thing, I guess. So global warming. Let's talk about that. Now we've covered it extensively from many, many angles, but I want you to kind of get a feel for the current state of affairs, because I think it is very, very important that we understand. This is from the Florida Sun Sentinel, and I picked this up last week. It says, Tropical Storm Barry brought some relief to Lake Okeechobee's thirst, but not enough to make a dent in South Florida's drought. About 2 inches of fell on the northern part of the lake, bringing the water level to 9.01 feet above sea level as of Sunday morning. That's up 8.9 feet from Saturday. Lake Okeechobee is still 4 to 5 feet below its average levels as the region endures a 10-inch rainfall deficit. Tropical Storm Barry made landfall in the Tampa Bay area Saturday morning and later weakened into a tropical depression as it continued northeast across Florida. The storm, which formed Friday in the Gulf of Mexico the first day of the 2007 hurricane season, knocked out power to thousands of South Florida customers, opened a hole in Interstate 95 in Lake Worth, and likely was to blame for the gust that sent a section of crane crashing into the roof of a synagogue in Fort Lauderdale. Although some weather watchers say the rainy season has begun, according to others, it is yet to start, and many hope it will come soon to end the severe drought. Barry's rains also gave a much-needed soaking to thousands of acres of burning swamp and timberland in northern Florida and southeastern Georgia. Although the rain was not enough to put out the blazes, officials said it allowed firefighters to focus on hot spots and on areas that were beginning to dry and could catch fire again. So they're in desperate need of rainfall in Florida and Georgia, and then those wildfires are really out of control. They've been going on for a while now, and it's a bad scene. So they're not the only place. There are some places that are getting plenty of rain and other places that are in great need, and America, for the most part, is not in good shape weather-wise. So we talked about this many, many times, but last year, I believe it was last summer, we were in drought conditions for 48 of the 50 states at some point, meaning that, obviously, it's not a good thing for the farming community. We've talked about that in terms of many things, as far as the crops and as far as livestock as well, because you have to be able to feed the animals. And then, of course, some of the tragic winter scenarios that we saw also come up with lots of snowfall, and then the inability to feed some of the animals has resulted in a lot of people just abandoning farming altogether. Now, there's a connection made here, and you'll see it from the Independent Online. Of course, the British media would be a little more honest about these sorts of things than our own, but it came out yesterday, folks. Here's what it says. America is facing its worst summer drought since the Dust Bowl years of the Great Depression, or perhaps even worse. From the mountains and desert of the West now into an eighth consecutive dry year to the wheat farms of Alabama, where crops are failing because of rainfall levels 12 inches lower than usual, to the vast, soupy expanse of Lake Okeechobee in southern Florida, which has become so dry it actually caught fire a couple of weeks ago, a continent, meaning America, is crying out for water. In the southeast, usually a lush, humid region, it is the driest few months since records began in 1895. So we've talked about all this, and we've said, pay close attention to that type of terminology, record-setting, unusual, historic, things like that. These are terms that we get to hear on a regular basis now, which is really not a good sign. California and Nevada, where burgeoning population centers coexist with often harsh, barren landscape, have seen less rain over the last year than at any time since 1924. The Sierra Nevada range, which straddles the two states, received only 27% of its usual snowfall in winter, with immediate knock-on effects on water supplies for the populations of Las Vegas and Los Angeles. The human impact for the moment has been limited, certainly nothing compared to the great westward migration of Okies in the 1930s. The Desperate March described by John Steinbeck in The Grapes of Wrath. Big farmers are now well protected by government subsidies, which we know, and emergency funds. Small farmers, some of whom are indeed struggling, have been slowly moving off the land for decades anyway. The most common inconvenience for the moment are restrictions on hose pipes and garden sprinklers in eastern cities. So, in essence, we are in a worse sort of rainfall, dust bowl type condition than we were sort of towards the start of the 30s. Now, it's a little different scenario. Most people in America don't make their living on farming. The big, giant corporate farms, they're fine. They get all of our tax money, and they get their payoffs to the government officials, and they plant genetically modified crops and things like that. So no big surprise in that regard. But it is noteworthy in a lot of areas because we've talked about this before. Water metering of private wells has been suggested in many places. I know the good people of Missouri fought that for a long time. When we had Professor Jim McCanny on the program, he said they were including RFID readers in those water meters so that way they could track you and your house and various things. I assume there would be some sort of formula by which they could do those things. It's also been suggested to ban the gathering of rainwater for drinking purposes, I suppose, in which case you'd say, well, why would they be doing that? Water is already expensive. I remember a time when I lived in various places, and we didn't have a water bill. They said, oh, you know, water's not it's not a utility you have to pay for. That was a great thing. Well, that's changed. It certainly changed for me. When I moved here, we do have water bills, and I always have. But it's far more expansive than that. Water is a natural resource. Natural resources must be protected to an extent, but at the same time, they're also being pimped out to foreign countries who want to, you know, of course, access the Great Lakes and various things like that. And there's a lot of fights going on between people in the areas that we're talking about, such as the Great Lakes areas, and the corporations that want to, of course, tap into that. And then also state to state, there's a lot of conflict as well about the quality of the water and who's responsible for it not being up to par and how can it be utilized and by whom. There's a lot of different intricacies in this, and it's a perfect reason for you to be filtering your water, my friends. But I digress. Back to the story. It says, but the long-term implications are escaping no one. Climatologists see a growing volatility in the southeast's weather. Today's drought coming close on the heels of the devastating hurricanes 2 to 3 years ago. In the West, meanwhile, a growing body of scientific evidence suggests a movement towards a state of perpetual drought by the middle of this century. According to Richard Seeger, a climatologist at Columbia State University and lead researcher of a report published recently by the government's National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, otherwise known as NOAA, he said this, quote, the 1930s drought lasted less than a decade. This, meaning this current drought cycle, is something that could remain for over 100 years, end quote. Well, some of the year's dry weather is cyclical. California actually had an unusually wet year last year, so many of the state's farmers still have plenty of water for their crops. Some of it portends more permanent damages. In Arizona, the tall mountains in the southern Sonoran Desert, known as Sky Islands because they've been welcome refuges from the desert heat for millennia, have already shown unmistakable signs of change. Predatory insects have started ravaging trees already weakened by record temperatures and fires over the last few years. Animal species such as frogs and red squirrels have been forced to move to higher, ever higher up the mountains in search of cooler temperatures and are in danger of dying out altogether. Mount Lemmon, which rises above the city of Tucson, boasts the southernmost ski resort in the United States but has barely attracted any snow over the last few years. Very interesting. Thomas Sweetnam, an environmental scientist at the University of Arizona in Tucson, to the New York Times a few months ago, said this, quote, a lot of people think climate change and the ecological repercussions are 50 years away, but it is happening now in the West. The data tells us that we are in the middle of one of the first big indicators of climate change impacts in the continental United States, end quote. So, global warming, I think, is, you know, when you look at the whole thing, again, it's not really the issue. And we've talked about this, record lows and snowfalls in weird places at weird times of the year. So that's not really the issue. But climate change itself, is that real? Yes, I think it is. I don't think it's human being caused, but I do think it is legitimate. And we must prepare for such things, folks. Please stay with us. We're back in three with more Frankly Speaking Radio. Have you heard of a privacy crisis? Odds are you're already immersed in one. The U.S. government is now legally tapping phones, monitoring emails, tracking purchases, and seizing property in record numbers. Banks are demanding invasive personal information for even the smallest transaction. Unfortunately, stalkers looking to harm you or your financial situation are using the same methods. So how can you protect yourself, your loved ones, and all that you own? Well, the first step is to purchase the most important how-to book you'll ever read. It's called Privacy Crisis by author Grant Hall. In minutes, you'll know the methods he himself has used and advised others about in order to bank anonymously, open a safety deposit box without a social security number. With Privacy Crisis, you'll discover how to avoid judgments, seal your credit files airtight, drop off the radar, and virtually disappear from those looking to cause you injury. The ebook and hardcover versions are available at www.privacycrisis.com. Grant Hall's Privacy Crisis contains information and legal methods the powers that be don't want you to know. Travel, bank, work, and live anonymously. Live free. You can also order Privacy Crisis by telephone. Call 702-433-6222.
How are you preparing ahead for the events in the future? In the near future, we know there will be those of us that will not be able to buy or sell. Stoves & More wants to help give you the freedom from the systems of the world and from skyrocketing fuel prices. Stoves & More is a dealer for all Amish-built wood cook stoves that will give you an independence you need to cook and bake your food, dry fruits and vegetables, heat your whole house water system, and heat your home. These state-of-the-art cook stoves are nothing like grandma's old stoves. They have large, airtight, efficient fireboxes that give you an all-night burn, easily heating up to 2,000 square feet. Whether or not you're off the grid, we have products for you from stoves to Staber washers and 12 and 24 volt refrigeration. At Stoves & More, we have the perfect products to complete your preparations. To the first 10 people who purchase a stove, we'll send a free copy of our newly released DVD, Getting Started with Wood Cook Stoves. Stoves & More offers the best selection at the lowest prices on the web, so visit us at www.stovesandmoreonline.com. That website again, stovesandmoreonline.com.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com or call 312-224-2710, 312-224-2710.
Welcome back. Glad you're here. You are listening, of course, to Frankly Speaking Radio. I am your host, Frank Whelan. Glad you're here. So we were talking about this story from yesterday out of the British news outlet, The Independent, talking about the drought here in America right now. Okay, this is obviously very, very important, especially to those of you out there who are farmers. And I've talked to a lot of you, and I know this is a big deal. We are seeing, as we've said many, many times, and gosh, I think it was just last week when we had, or it was the week before, we had Norm Franz on. He was talking about sort of finance and biblical finance. He said, look at what, you know, it started out with was a garden. You know, the first people were in a garden, and there's something to that. And there's certainly a lot of joy that I get out of trying to maintain mine, a lot of headache-inducing smacking my head into the fence post because I'm frustrated by, you know, various bugs and things like that. But the point is, my friends, is that these are our natural resources, and these are really the benchmark upon which America was built as the farmers, and we've lost all that, and we continue to lose that. The point is that under these conditions, it probably won't get back to that, so it's bad news. Anyway, it says across the West, farmers and city water consumers are locked in a perennial battle over water rights, one that the cities are slowly winning. Down the line, though, there are some serious questions about how to keep showers and lawn sprinklers going in the retirement communities of Nevada and Arizona. Lake Powell, the reservoir on the upper Colorado River that helps provide water across a vast expanse of the West, has been less than half full for years, with little prospect of filling up in the foreseeable future. According to the NOAA's recent report, the West can expect 10 to 20% less rainfall by mid-century, which will increase air pollution in the cities, kill off trees and water-retaining giant cactus plants, and shrink the available water supply to as much as 25%. In the Southeast, the crisis is immediate and may be alleviated at any moment by the arrival of the tropical storm season. In Georgia, where the dry spring on record closely followed on the heels of a devastating frost, farmers are afraid they might lose anywhere from half to two-thirds of crops such as melons and the state's celebrated peaches. Many cities are restricting lawn sprinklers to 1 hour per day, and some places 1 hour only every other day. Now, remember, we've talked about that in Florida as well. They actually have a squad of helicopters, you know, and they're flying around taking pictures of people who are, you know, watering lawns when they shouldn't and, you know, filling up swimming pools and whatever else they might be doing, just kids playing in the hose, you know, with a sprinkler or something. It's they'll photograph that and then send people a bill and say, here's your proof, kind of like a speeding ticket. Really awful stuff, but that's kind of where we're at, okay? The most striking effect of the dry weather, it says, has been to expose large parts of the bed of Lake Okeechobee, which we just discussed. The vast circular expanse of water east of Palm Beach, Florida, which acts as a backup water supply for 5 million Floridians. Archaeologists have had a field day dredging the soil for human bone fragments, tools, bits of pottery, and ceremonial jewelry thought to have belonged to the natives who lived near the lake before the Spanish arrived in the 16th century. So the waters receded so much there at Lake Okeechobee that it's now an excavation, which I guess is great for science, but not so great for, human life. Environmentalists, it says, are not entirely upset because the lake is notoriously polluted with pesticides and other farm products that then poison nearby rivers. Fish stocks in the river in the area are now booming. Nothing that was so strange as the fires that broke out over the 12,000 acres on the northern edge of the lake at the end of May. They were eventually doused by Tropical Storm Barry last weekend. State water managers, however, say it will take a whole summer of rainstorms or longer to restore the lake. The Dust Bowl was the result of catastrophic dust storms causing major ecological and agricultural damage to American prairies in the 1930s. The fertile soil of the Great Plains had been exposed by removal of grass during plowing over decades of ill-conceived farming techniques. The First World War and immense profits had driven farmers to push the land well beyond its natural limit. When drought hit, the soil dried, became dust, and blew eastwards, mostly in large black clouds. This caused an exodus from Texas, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and the surrounding Great Plains, with more than 500,000 Americans left homeless in the Great Depression. So, again, wrapping up, taking a look at the Dust Bowl, the Great Depression, and right now they're saying this is the worst summer drought since that time, and perhaps could be even worse, because here we are only a week and a half into June. So what is that doing to the farming and whatnot? Well, here's an interesting story from yesterday, the AP. Wheat prices surged to a record high for 2007 Monday as heavy rains threatened to damage an already tarnished crop. Elsewhere, the commodity markets engineered a recovery from Friday's sharp losses in industrial and precious metals and more than a $2 drop in crude oil prices. Gold, oil, and copper all climbed while other agricultural futures logged sharp gains on the back of the wheat rally. While rain-soaked Midwestern wheat fields on Monday, dry skies stifled the moisture-hungry eastern corn belt, sending corn prices above $4 a bushel. So wheat hits a record high. Corn is at over $4 a bushel. And according to the DTN market analyst Elaine Cubb, she said, quote, the rain falling in the U.S. is falling in all of the wrong places, end quote. Very interesting. Bullish traders also ran with a report from the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Monday in which the agency lowered its projections for winter wheat production this month and raised its export projections. Shortfalls in other producing nations will raise overseas demand for U.S. wheat, said the USDA. Wheat for July delivery jumped 28.4 cents to settle at $5.56 a bushel on the Chicago Board of Trade after coming just a fraction of a penny within the exchange's maximum daily price swing of 30 cents. July corn climbed 14 cents to $3.96 a bushel, while December corn, which is the largest open interest, finished at $4.06 a bushel. And it goes on and on. Anyway, stay with us. We'll finish up the story and move on to some other things when we come back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a biweekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Welcome back. Glad you're here. You're listening to Frankly Speaking Radio. Amazing that we are almost halfway. Well, we are halfway now through the first hour of the program. And a big, big, big thank you to our good friends and our sponsor for this hour, Howard Creek Resort. They have 9 fully equipped individual housekeeping cabins. Now, if you don't know what that means, basically it's a cabin. It's not a room. You don't have to deal with neighbors like you would at some hotels or anything like that. It's your own little place. It's got, you know, all the fun stuff, kitchens and refrigerators and stoves, so you can bring your own food and cook your own meals if you'd like. And it's got heat and it's got air conditioning, making it the perfect family vacation spot any time of the year. It's also very close to a lot of fun things you can do. And, of course, whatever it is that you might be looking for. You are very, very close by to all of that. It's a fantastic place for family reunions and great time to just get away, even if it's just for a night or sometimes maybe even longer. Of course, 4th of July is coming up. Some people might have some days off. I urge you to consider Howard Creek Resort for you and your family. You visit them on the web at www.howardcreek.com or call them toll-free at 877-253-7690. And a big thank you to them, of course, for making this show possible. We ask you to support Howard Creek Resort and all of our sponsors and advertisers. So, we were talking about this story from the AP yesterday about wheat hitting a record high, corn is up, and all that stuff. And that's not necessarily a good thing, per se. I mean, I suppose it can be, depending on what side of the counter you might be on. But at the same time, with these farming conditions being so miserable, it's not necessarily a great thing for us. But anyway, it's not just, obviously, the agricultural side of things. It says in energy, crude oil prices bounced back from Friday's drop as light sweet crude picked up $1.21 to close at $65.97 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Still at about $3 here in Northwest Arkansas. $2.99 is the cheapest I've seen so far. There are some speculations that it may drop in price. But again, I mean, for us to have $3 a gallon when it's at $65, that's just unacceptable, honestly. But it goes on and on. I mean, we all know how it works and why it works and different things like that. It says overseas falling inventories of copper, lead, zinc, and tin helped push industrial metals prices higher on the London Metal Exchange. Meanwhile, precious metals prices recovered from a nearly $15 tumble on Friday. August gold added $8.70 an ounce to settle at $659 on the NYMEX, despite strength in the U.S. dollar and rising treasury yields. NYMEX silver for July rose 23.5 cents to close at $13.275 an ounce. So gold's up, silver's up, oil is up, wheat is up, corn is up, and all that jazz. So I don't know. Like I said, could look like a good thing to some, could look like a bad thing to others. It just depends on your point of view and your situation. So that's what's going on here in the U.S. And again, if you're interested in preserving some of your wealth, you may want to consider investing in some gold and silver. And, of course, you can do that at republicbroadcasting.org and contact Robbie at the Republic Trading Group, and he will be happy to answer all of your questions. Here's some other things that are going on. This is out of Canada, CBC.ca. Came out last Tuesday, a week ago. Billions of people face dramatic risks and changes to their livelihoods if snow cover, sea ice, glaciers, and permafrost continue to melt, says a UN report. The Global Outlook for Ice and Snow, released Monday, says as temperatures rise, drinking and agricultural water sources could disappear, and at the same time, avalanches and flooding from unstable glacial lakes will increase. Meanwhile, declining snow cover and sea ice could accelerate the pace of global warming because snow and ice reflect sunlight, decreasing warming that occurs when it is absorbed by darker surfaces such as water and land. And if permafrost thaws, greenhouse gases that were trapped in ice will be released, which could dramatically increase the pace of global warming and its impact, according to the report. Now, that's very, very interesting, and it's not talked about very often. Because, again, they can't tax you for that, they can't fine you for that, and they can't encourage you to save the planet by dealing with trapped greenhouse gases in the permafrost. But yet, this is a big issue, and it's bigger, probably, than you may have thought. Here's what it says. As permafrost melts, it's creating new bodies of water that are releasing the global warming gas methane into the atmosphere. In places like Siberia, the force of those emissions keeps holes open in the ice on the lakes, even in deep sub-zero temperatures. The amount of gas being emitted by the lakes, called thermokarst lakes, is as much as 5 times greater than previously thought. If the permafrost melts, volumes of greenhouse gases equivalent to the amount already present in the atmosphere would be released, according to the report. Translation: the amount that we already have in the atmosphere would double if this permafrost melts. So does that not indicate to a certain extent that all of these ridiculous concepts like the ones we brought forth out of Denver, okay, their idea for saving the planet and people having to make some sacrifices in order to save the planet, these things are pointless and futile. If you drive less, if you carpool more, if you have energy efficient light bulbs, if you have all those things, everything that they've offered up and every sort of punitive measure they've offered up to sort of train us like the better monkeys they want us to be, such as, of course, fining us and taxing us and any number of things, will make no difference whatsoever. Because all it takes is permafrost to melt, which your driving doesn't cause. You're breathing and exhaling and passing gas. None of that causes permafrost to melt. So there's really no point in it. I think this is an important thing. Because see, who's this coming from? The United Nations. Okay? So what are they saying? How can the United Nations, on one hand, recommend severe greenhouse gas emissions cuts, and at the same time basically say that it doesn't matter? Because the greenhouse gases that are in permafrost will double what we already have. I think it's an important point, but nobody's going to call them on it. It says, if the permafrost melts, volumes of greenhouse gases equivalent to the amount already present in the atmosphere will be released, as we just said, between 750 billion and 950 billion tons of organic carbon are thought to be locked in permafrost. There are some 750 billion tons of organic carbon in the atmosphere today. So again, we would go from 750 billion tons of organic carbon in the air to at least doubling that. Because there's between 750 and 950 billion tons in permafrost. So if that melts, well, then it's a done deal, I'd say, right? Then we have the massive temperature increases and so on and so forth until it, the temperatures go down again. But anyway, it is raining in some places around the world. This one came out yesterday from Reuters. Torrential rain has killed at least 71 people in floods. Houses have collapsed and rock slides have killed people across southern China, with more heavy rain predicted for much of the week, said state media on Monday. About 643,000 people were evacuated and some 56,000 houses destroyed and 104,000 damaged, according to the official Xinhua news agency. According to Zhang Shizan, a resident of Mei County in Guangdong province, he said, quote, "We've got experience of floods, but I've never known a flood like this," end quote. Again, one of those weird sort of bits of terminology. I've never seen anything like this. The National Meteorological Center forecast heavy rain south of the Yangtze, China's longest river, and continues downpours in the south of the country until Thursday. Nearly 9 million people have been affected by this, 13 people missing, and $446.8 million of damage has been caused. So this is pretty significant. I mean, this is, we're not seeing... 71 people killed and all that, and that's a lot, don't get me wrong. It's not on par with Katrina, it's not on par with Indonesia or anything like that, but this is significant, and they're not really talking about it in the American media. A total of 1,350 square miles of crops have been damaged. China's typhoon season is just getting underway in the south. Experts last month warned that the Yangtze could flood badly this year for the first time since 1998, when flooding killed more than 3,000 people. Other parts of the country were reeling with intense heat, with the northeastern province of Jilin seeing temperatures soar above 40 degrees Celsius, which translates to 104 degrees Fahrenheit. So extreme heat and rain in China, and they're not the only ones either. This one is from the AP, and it came out yesterday. It says, monsoon rains triggered mudslides Monday in the hillside slums of the port city of southern Bangladesh, killing at least 67 people, rescue officials said. Lightning strikes killed 11 people in nearby districts. 76 people died from mudslides, or 67, excuse me. And lightning strikes killed 11 people. Seems a little strange. Nearly 8.5 inches of rain fell in just 3 hours early Monday, submerging downtown Chittagong in about 4 feet of water, the local weather service and witnesses said. According to Mofazer Rahman, age 75, who lives near the city's main hospital, he said, quote, "I have never seen so much water in my life," end quote. There's that phrase again. And he's 75. It's not a 2-year-old saying, "I've never seen so much water in my life." It's a 75-year-old. Bangladesh, a low-lying, deeply impoverished nation of 144 million people, is prone to seasonal floods and cyclones, which kill hundreds every year. So they're trying to wrap it up and say, it's not that bad, really. Well, let's see what difference a day makes. MSNBC today. Rescuers found 20 more bodies buried under mud in the Bangladesh port city of Chittagong on Tuesday, said officials and witnesses, taking the total number of storm-related deaths to 130. So it's doubled in one day. Disaster management officials said they feared the death toll will climb higher as a search by troops, firefighters, police, and volunteers intensified after the rains eased on Tuesday morning and the waters began to recede. Authorities in Chittagong said the flooding was so extensive that survivors were having difficulty finding dry ground to bury the dead. Flooding was so extensive, they don't have dry ground to bury the casualties. That seems unusual to me. Maybe it's common in Bangladesh. I don't know. The annual monsoon has spread across Bangladesh in the last few days, and heavy rains, the highest recorded levels in 7 years, it's another similar phrase, have also inundated parts of the capital, Dhaka, and other regions of the country. Rivers burst their banks in other parts of the country. Nearly 1 million people living on river islands and in low-lying areas have already been marooned in northern and eastern regions of the country. That's according to an official of the Disaster Management Ministry. 1 million people stranded because of the flooding in Bangladesh. That seems like a lot. I was talking with somebody about this. A lot of people maybe didn't catch this, but a hurricane hitting Iran. It's bizarre, right? This one came out Saturday out of New Zealand, stuff.co.nz. And, of course, they call them cyclones in that part of the world. And it says, Cyclone Gonu's power was waning on Friday after it killed at least 54 people and wrought damage in energy producers Oman and Iran earlier this week. An Iranian official said the hurricane had weakened and its impact will be completely gone. At least 36 people have been reported missing in the storm, which had raised fears of a disruption of exports from the Middle East, origin of more than a quarter of the world's oil. Oil prices rose to around $71 a barrel on Thursday. Mini al-Fahal, Oman's only oil terminal for 650,000 barrels per day output, resumed operations after a three-day closure, said a shipper on Friday. But the main gas export terminal at Sur was yet to open, and state media said there was still disruption to fuel distribution in the Gulf Arab state. Omani television showed scenes of devastation with cars piled on top of each other and people lining up near tankers distributing drinking water. Oman's state news agency, ONA, said 49 people had been killed, 27 missing. Iranian state media said on Friday another man had drowned, bringing to 5 the number of dead in Iran, where 9 have been reported missing. Oman lowered its level of alert to orange from the maximum of red, and an official said conditions were, quote, gradually returning to normal, end quote. That's according to the ONA news agency. They also said earlier that winds from Gonu, downgraded from a Category 1 hurricane since Wednesday, were moderate and sea waves were about 2 meters high. So this thing was really significant for a while, and there was some thought that it would disrupt this. Now, think about that. 25% of the entire world's oil supply going through this area, they just happen to have basically a giant hurricane, and oil prices don't really move too much, honestly. Gasoline certainly didn't go up. So why is it that when we have hurricanes, the prices go through the roof and people start freaking out? Oman, it says, said Gonu could be the strongest storm to reach its coast since 1977. Another similar phrase. That storm took an inland trajectory toward rural areas while Gonu moved along the heavily populated coast. So this one was more detrimental to people than the previously most intense storm. This one came out yesterday from Iranmania.com. Flooding caused as a result of Cyclone Gonu and its aftermath severed road and telecommunications links and disrupted drinking water supplies to villages in southeastern Sistan/Baluchistan province, according to the Iran Daily. Announcing this, the Deputy Governor General of the Province for Developmental Affairs stated in a meeting on Sunday that flooding had damaged water supply networks to 427 villages in southern Sistan-Baluchistan. Telephone lines in 300 rural regions were affected by the flood as well. Cyclone Gonu ripped through the coast of Oman and southeastern Iran on Wednesday and Thursday. So big problems with their water, drinking water available to them, and certainly telephone lines in Iran, and lots of people dead and Iran and Oman combined. Nasty stuff. So, rain, hurricanes, different things like that. Sea level rises, blah, 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 blah. How about some heat waves? It is June. This is from PressTV.ir. It came out yesterday. At least 63 more people died Sunday from the effects. Yeah, from the effects of Pakistan's record-breaking heat wave, bringing the weekend death toll to around 110. So 110 people died just over the weekend in Pakistan. The mercury rose as high as 52 degrees in southwest parts of the country as the hot spell entered its fourth day, also setting a 78-year record in the city of Lahore in the central Punjab province. Again, that phrase, 78-year record high, 52 degrees, which is, I don't know what that translates to Celsius, but, you know, I think they said that, 40 degrees was 104? In the China story? Let's see. I've got it here. somewhere nearby. But that, you know, I don't know. I've never been good at doing the translations of the different temperatures. So 40 degrees Celsius is 104 degrees Fahrenheit, which means that in Pakistan, there are 52 degrees Celsius, which is probably extraordinarily hot. It says around 50 people died in the province where the temperature hovered around 49 degrees and prolonged power cuts added to the discomfort, said the newspaper. Hundreds of people were also hospitalized with sunstroke, newspapers reported, while meteorologists predicted the heat wave will last at least three more days. A similar heat wave killed more than 80 people in Pakistan last year. They had 110 this year, just in this this past weekend. That should tell you something. Meanwhile, it says at least 27 people have been killed as the heat wave intensified across parts of India, causing temperatures to cross the 45 degrees Celsius mark. The heat-related deaths, the highest in a day during the summer, were reported from five states on Sunday, raising the death toll since the end of April to 80, according to the Asian Age newspaper. That's significant. And, excuse me, here we have a bit of an update. This one just today from the same place, PressTV.ir. It says the heat wave gripping north and south central India has claimed 75 more lives, raising the death toll due to harsh weather this summer to 148. So what a difference a day makes, my friends. You may have heard this. This one came out all the way back in May 2007, May 31st to be specific, the Associated Press. And this ties in with, again, the projected hurricane season here in America for 2007, which started 12 days ago. Here's what it says. As we enter into what weather prognosticators are euphemistically calling another active season, citizens and civil servants from Texas to New England are asking themselves, where is the next New Orleans? The Associated Press has pinpointed five of the most vulnerable U.S. coastal ports. Among them, Galveston, Texas, sitting uneasily by the Gulf of Mexico, is residents limited to a single evacuation route. Miami, full of elderly people and others who might be trapped. And, of course, this one you've heard before, New York City, long spared a major storm but susceptible to a calamity of submerged subways and refugees caught in horrendous traffic jams. According to William Gray, a researcher based at Colorado State University, these cities may face a battering this year. In an updated forecast released Thursday, he predicted a 74% chance of a major hurricane hitting the U.S. coast in the season that begins Friday. Obviously, it's a little outdated. He foresees 17 named storms and 9 hurricanes, 5 of them intense. While local weather concerns run more to snowstorms than tropical storms, the nation's largest city, meaning New York, is about due for a major hurricane. Think 130-mile-per-hour winds and 30-foot storm surge with flooding that could turn City Hall into a lone building perched above an immersed lower Manhattan. The storm threatens to inflict more than $100 billion in economic losses while forcing the evacuation of 3 million people, more than 6 times the population of pre-Katrina New Orleans. It's a bad scene. The last major New York area hurricane was the Long Island Express of 1938. Which caused 700 deaths along the eastern seaboard. Historically, the city endures a hurricane roughly once every 90 years. Inevitably, another one will hit, and says Nicholas K. Koch, a professor of geology at Queens College and one of the nation's foremost hurricane experts, he says, quote, has the potential for catastrophic effects, end quote. Very interesting. Manny, are we not going to break here? Just want to know if I should continue. All right, we'll get it sorted out. All right, so the story continues saying New York City is most at risk between August and October. The 1938 hurricane, which hit in September, came ashore on Long Island, about 75 miles from the city. A similar blast in 2007 would result in total economic losses of more than $100 billion. And that's not even a worst-case scenario, according to projections by AIR Worldwide Corporation, a Boston-based firm specializing in risk management for natural catastrophes. A Category 3 hurricane in New York would behave like a Category 4 in the South for several reasons. So even if it was a lesser degree on the hurricane scale, okay, it would still be a bigger storm. Okay, that's important to understand. It says a northern hurricane typically travels at 34 miles per hour, about triple the speed of a southern storm. and the city is particularly vulnerable because of its location at a bend between the Long Island and New Jersey coastlines, sitting at a right angle to incoming storms. A major hurricane would produce a storm surge of up to 30 feet, with flooding in all five boroughs, airport and highway closings, and inevitable traffic jams. The lower Manhattan flood zone for a hurricane making landfall just south of the city includes the World Trade Center site, Wall Street, and police headquarters. City Hall, which sits on higher ground and is located toward the middle of the island, might turn into a small island at the east and Hudson rivers converge to its south. It sounds implausible, perhaps, but it's happened before. A September 1821 hurricane raised the tides by 13 feet in 1 hour and flooded Manhattan from its southern tip to Canal Street. Today, that would knock out most of Wall Street and assorted subway lines, while flooding tourist attractions like the South Street Seaport. The city's biggest beaches in the Rockaways and Coney Island would temporarily disappear as the Atlantic Ocean came inland. Last year, the city unveiled its new hurricane plan, evacuating 3 million people while providing shelter for some 600,000 others. Officials at the Office of Emergency Management estimated the preparedness cost of up to $30 million. But part of the preparedness program is convincing New Yorkers that hurricanes are on the list of big city worries. Said Koch, quote, "People often ask me, what's the most dangerous thing about a hurricane hitting New York? And I say, the New Yorker. People have fixed in their minds that hurricanes happen on palm-fringed coasts, but you cannot deny history," end quote. It's an excellent, excellent point, and one that needs to be expressed. So here we go, folks. Again, as we said, and we've covered a great deal of material here in this first hour as we've flown through it. Global warming, is it happening? Yes, I believe it is. Is it caused by human beings? I don't believe that that's true. And are we going to see some impacts this year? Probably. And we talked about this just last summer with the drought, and then wintertime when we had excessive snowfall and a very, very late frost here in the United States. A lot of places damaged, a lot of farmers taking a financial beating as a result of these weather swings. Now, what does all that mean in the grand scheme of things? Well, it means this, that through the process of gradualism, most people in America don't notice the changes that are already happening. But those who are pretty cognizant of things have picked up on this. Now, maybe you've noticed that when you go to the grocery store, things cost anywhere from 2 to 3 times higher. They do here. I'm sure they do there. You can attribute that to the high price of gasoline and diesel. You can attribute that to the high cost of living in the area you live in. But watch as it continues to increase slowly but steadily. Now, gasoline gets reported on a regular basis. You drive by in your car. Maybe you don't need gas, so you're just tooling around town. You're going to see the signs for gas prices. It's more, you're more aware of it. It's more in your face. But when you see the price of chicken or strawberries or broccoli, these things start to go up slowly, 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 and you wonder where it's going to stop. And the question is it going to stop? I urge you, my friends, at this time to take some steps to prepare. There are lots of different things you can do. Now, maybe you live in a place and you say, oh, I can't have a garden. They have all sorts of indoor growing options for you. There are certainly places you can get together with friends and have a community garden. You can do your best to certainly be aware of what you're eating, what you're putting into your body, and maybe shop around and try to find a better deal. See, a lot of the cheap stuff, it can be better for you. Sometimes, of course, the cheapest stuff is the most highly processed and therefore the worst for you. But you have to know what it is, what those incredibly long, 18-syllable words mean on the ingredients list. You got to make sure you're eating properly. You also have to make sure that you have the capacity to filter your water if need be, because you might be in a situation, my friends, where you're collecting rainwater simply to survive. And if that's the case, we all know that they're spraying stuff in the air. Is that rainwater safe to drink unfiltered? Probably not. These are things you can do right now. There are also different kinds of foods you can buy that are already packaged up and simply need to add some things, maybe like water, all sorts of different options. So consider what you need to consider while you have the time to do it. Figure out what you need for your family in order to get by. And, of course, one of the things that is absolutely vital to your survivability of anything that comes down the line is good health. And we'll be talking about that with our good friend Colonel Joe when we come back here for hour number two. Please stay with us, my friends. More Frankly Speaking Radio in 90 seconds.
A message for all homeowners and prospective homeowners.